Good morning. I'm going to be talking about Gregorine parasites today in communities of dragonflies in Central Texas. Gregorine parasites are ubiquitous and quite diverse. They're in fact among the most diverse groups of protozoan parasites that there are. There are estimates that there may be more than 1 million species of Gregorines alone. They infect a wide variety of invertebrates, annelid worms. This segmented worms are a big group, along with the insects. And among the insect orders, orthopterans are a big group, roaches, mosquitoes, and dragonflies, and damselflies, in fact, are turning out to be a big group as well. So our major goal in this initial program is to identify the dragonfly species that serve as host for those Gregorine parasites in Central Texas. So Rich Clopton at Peru State College in Nebraska, who's a major Gregorine taxonomist, has made the estimate that there may be 1 million species out there of parasites, the Gregorine parasites. So just to put that into perspective, the total, depending on who you ask here, but the total amount of species that we've described among all the kingdoms is about 1.5 million. So if we have an additional, or we have 1 million Gregorine parasites still to be described, that's obviously a substantial amount of work to still be done, and really represents a great amount of fauna still out there. So the parasites themselves have quite complex life cycles. Most protozoans do. They may have a single host, they may have multiple hosts. Fortunately for me, being not much of a parasitologist, they have a single host system in odonate, so it makes it a little easier. But the dragonfly itself will infect this infective stage called an oocyst, and this is blown up here. Once the oocyst is ingested from the environment, that's where they pick these up, these exudation takes place and the sporozoites are released, which then attach the host epithelial tissue. They develop into this structure called a trophozoite, which has this epimerite which attaches to the epithelial tissue there, and this is the trophozoite is the one that anchors itself to this epithelium and absorbs nutrients from the lumen of the dragonfly. At some point, this trophozoite detaches and forms a gamont, which is the reproducing stage, and this gamont will coalesce with another gamont of another type, mating type, and they'll form a stable mating pair here. A membrane will be put around that. This stage here is called the gametocyst, and they're quite easy to see and very characteristic. It's very easy to tell it's a gametocyst when you do these dissections. In the gametocyst, though, there are two gamonts at this point. They're separated by a membrane, and each one of the nuclei, or each nucleus in each gamont, then goes under binary fission, which produces multiple nuclei in each gamont. When this membrane disintegrates, the nuclei fuse together during fertilization, and here are the gametes. And fertilization takes place, and each fertilization event results in one oocyst. So all of this is happening within the gametocyst, which by the way, was excreted with the dragonfly fecal matter. The gametocyst is what shed back into the environment. So within this gametocyst, you've got basically gametogenesis taking place. The gametes fertilize, and you get an oocyst. Then within each oocyst, they go through a meiotic division, two mitotic divisions, so you end up with eight haploid sporozoites in each oocyst. And again, this gametocyst eventually ruptures, releasing all these infective oocysts into the environment. So this again is what the dragonflies are picking up. They're either picking it up when they're drinking water that's infested with these oocysts, or perhaps they're attached to leg bristles of aquatic insects as they emerge, and they're getting them that way. Here are a couple of the parasites themselves, trophozoites, and probably gamonts in here. These are attached to this epithelial tissue, so I've just pinned back the dragonfly abdomen. This is a female. Here's some eggs, and here's a couple more back here, but they're quite large, very easy to recognize, and easy to count too. So the research objectives at the beginning here are to identify the dragonfly host, and then also in collaboration with Tammy Cook at Sam Houston State in Huntsville, Texas, another Gregorine taxonomist, to help try to get a handle on some of the species. Are they all the same species, or are they multiple species that we're dealing with? And then to determine parasite prevalence and loads, looking at a whole host of variations, including temporal patterns, habitat environmental assessments, and then host species variations. In other words, are there certain characteristics that an individual of a particular species may exhibit that makes it more susceptible to picking up these parasites? And then eventually to, in fact, really quickly here, like this week, we're going to begin trying to produce some Gregorine DNA primers to help use in quantitative PCR in hopes that we can quantify these the amounts of oocyst in a water sample. Oops. So the two major reservoirs that we've been really hitting the last year and a half is in McLennan County, which is in central Texas. We have two sites. All the data that I'm showing you today is from last year, which was from April and November of 2007. We had two reservoirs. One was relatively small, one was relatively large. Battle Lake, we collected weekly from, and it's a quite shallow reservoir, lots of littoral vegetation, very good habitat for dragonflies, about 0.32 square kilometers in surface area, and we collected a little bit more than 2,500 individuals. Trading House Creek Reservoir, larger reservoir, 8 square kilometers in surface area, collected biweekly there, and we only ended up with a little more than 300 specimens. So looking at the list of hosts that we've identified to carry these parasites, there are 12 species here of dragonflies that are distributed among three families. The numbers in parentheses are those numbers that we've identified, or counted, or collected, I guess, dissected. And so these are the hosts that we've confirmed to be actual hosts. This list over here are what I'm considering non-host at this point, and I'd say it's really quite tentative. If you look at the numbers in parentheses here of those that we've collected, the numbers are really small. So there may be, as we collect more of these, we may move them over into the host category. It may be just that we collected some that didn't carry anything. So this is probably a tentative list, but we have identified a substantial number of new hosts. The big four that we've collected in terms of abundance at the two sites, at both sites, are Brachymysia gravida, Erythema simplicicolis, which I'll come back to in just a few minutes, Celothema epinina, and Pachydiplex longipennis. All of these are perchers. Some of them are territorial, some of them are not. But these are the big four, and I'm going to focus on one of these in just 1 minute. But before we do that, I want to just kind of look at the community at these two reservoirs together, just to show you some temporal patterns that we're noticing. So here on the x-axis, we've got time from April to November down here. On this axis, we've got prevalence. So this is the infection rate of those individuals or that sample size during that month. And in blue, these blue bars correspond with the prevalence values. So as you can see, in April, we had virtually nothing was infected. In November, it was up to 100% of the specimens we were collecting were infected. So you get this nice trend of it increasing through the flying season. The red line here indicates the average load or the mean load for these individuals. So the mean load is the number of parasites per infected host. And you can see here again that we increased from about, in May, it was about 2% infected, I think, an average load of 2 parasites per host. And then in November, it was an average of 25. And we were getting numbers up to about 100 parasites in one dragonfly specimen. So then we wanted to look, just to kind of get some handle on the population. These two reservoirs, here's Trading House Creek, very large relative to Battle Lake. Here's very small. But these reservoirs are actually close in proximity. They're only 2.5 kilometers apart. So we wanted to see, we expected they'd be relatively the same in terms of their parasite load and prevalence. And when we looked at the prevalence, the blue bar here is Battle Lake, the smaller reservoir. The red line here is the larger reservoir. And this is prevalence over the time. So what you see generally here is at the beginning of the year, flying season, they're all about the same. They start off the same point. And then at the end of the season, they're all really up there around 100%. But during the middle of the season, during the summer, in July and August, we actually had statistically significant differences. At Battle Lake, for example, the community was infected. About 52 or 53% was infected, whereas at Trading House, it was about 15%. So we did see both increases at both sites, but there was a difference here with respect to the middle of the flying season. When we looked at average loads, same thing here. This is Battle Lake in blue and Trading House in red. And so it's the same structure as the previous slide, but the error bars are 95% confidence intervals. And so what we see here is virtually no difference in load. And this is a trend that we see whether we look at species by species or we look at habitat variations, they're all about the same load. Real quick here, this is Erythema simplicicolis. In fact, I think I'm gonna skip this slide. We also wanted to look at host gender biases, see if there was any host gender bias. We just submitted a manuscript on this, and we found that Brachymesia gravida, Erythema simplicicolis, did in fact exhibit gender biases. And there was a female bias for Brachymesia, there was a male bias for Erythemus. Celothemus here was quite close in terms of statistics. We'll kind of keep an eye on that one this year. And then these two, Libellula luctuosa, Pachydiplex longipennis, exhibited no difference. These were very abundant specimens in our collections. So in conclusion, about 48% of the dragonfly species surveyed we found to be host. Prevalence and parasite load did increase through the flying season. The prevalence within host species varied between adjacent habitats, and we also found this bidirectional male bias and a female bias in prevalence for Erythemus and Brachymesia. We are just wrapping up our 2008 collection season. We have about 3,000 specimens that are waiting for me to return to start cutting open. We're starting to do some primer work for quantitative PCR, and we're also looking at habitat analysis using RGMOS, a damselfly across Texas, to get some a handle on the environments. I'd like to acknowledge three undergraduates here, Dave Cummings, Edgar Alvarez, and Isis Dominguez, primarily for their work in the lab and out in the field for collecting, and the Temple College Faculty Advancement Grant for providing the funds for me to get here today. Thanks. We don't know. We really don't have a very good handle at all on the species. They're quite difficult to even identify. You have to have sophisticated software and measurements of the cell, but we don't know. We're working on that, actually.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.